Howdy, howdy, ho. Welcome to today's show. I had the pleasure of giving a dinner time Q&A talk in New York City at the wonderful restaurant of my friend, Chef David Boulay, over in the Flatiron District in New York City. He has this amazing restaurant that's all designed around healthy ingredients that he handpicks from places like Japan and France. He travels all over the world finding the best of the best ingredients, brings them back, makes amazing meals, and then brings speakers and physicians and nutritionists and even hacks like me to talk at you while you're eating dinner. We decided to turn the entire dinner into this massive health and fitness and nutrition and biohacking Q&A, and I think you're going to absolutely dig it. The show notes for everything I talk about, if I mention anything, you'll find it in the show notes. BenGreenfieldFitness.com/Boulay. That's BOULEYQA. BenGreenfieldFitness/Boulay QA. BOULEYQA. That's where the show notes are at for everything we talk about.
Hey, you want to spice things up in the bedroom and boost your sexual performance and do it naturally without nasty prescription drugs? You gotta check out this stuff, Joy Mode. It's a powder. You can put it in water, or if you're like me and you're a savage, you can dry powder into your mouth. Contains clinically supported doses of L-citrulline, arginine, yohimbine, and vitamin C. So after taking this stuff called their sexual performance booster, again by Joy Mode, your blood levels of arginine and yohimbine increase, and that directly promotes nitric oxide production, penile tissue relaxation, and increased drive. Well, the antioxidant action of vitamin C protects the nitric oxide from oxidative degradation, which then enhances the blood flow promoting activity of the nitric oxide. They thought of everything. They're super smart over at Joy Mode, and collectively these effects enhance sex drive and blood flow naturally to the penis or to the clitoris. My wife takes it too. It's amazing. You get better orgasms, better blood flow. You can kiss nasty prescription medications goodbye and have natural guilt-free energy for boosting your sexual performance. You can get 20% off your first order from Joy Mode. How? Go to usejoymode.com/greenfield. That's usejoymode.com/greenfield. J-O-Y. Usejoymode.com/greenfield. They'll give you 20% off your first order. Last night, I got my shipment in. That's right. Paleo Valley sent me their fermented meat sticks, which are amazing. They're these beef sticks. I gave a few to some of my friends already, which they love. I actually interviewed Stephen Gundry on my podcast, and he talked about how when you look at a lot of these blue zones, the ones that are the highest ranking in terms of longevity eat meat, but the meat that they eat is actually fermented. And that's exactly what they've done with Paleo Valley. They've actually taken really good grass-fed, grass-finished beef. They've fermented, which naturally introduces gut-friendly probiotics, but more importantly, breaks down a lot of the sugars that would normally cause meat to be harmful, concentrates the vitamins, makes it more digestible, and they have fantastic flavors. They got the original. They've got one that's like a summer sausage. They have a garlic sausage. They have a teriyaki. It's probably my favorite. And you can now get your hands on fermented beef sticks that basically blow that Slim Jim beef jerky out of the water. So check out paleovalley.com/Ben. That's paleovalley.com/Ben to try out these beef sticks and get 15% off your order. Not just beef sticks, fermented beef sticks. Well, if you're tired of spending hours on cardio with minimal results, then listen up, because I got a game-changing fitness breakthrough for you. The Carol Bike, science-backed, time-saving solution trusted by experts for optimizing health and longevity. They use a special form of a workout called a Rehit, which allows you to achieve superior health and fitness benefits compared to regular cardio in 90% less time. That's amazing. That's a lot of time, 90%. Studies show that by doing Carol's 5-minute workout just 3 times a week, you can improve your fitness by 12%, reduce your risk of type 2 diabetes by 62%, and even wind back your internal body clock by 10 years. The science is clear. Carol Bike is your ticket to a healthier and more vibrant life. You got to try it to believe it and to see what I'm saying. I mean, it's not like a walk in the park. When you're pushing hard in those intervals, you're pushing, but then it's just like over and it's done and it walks you through it. It's very motivating. It's 5 feet away from me right now. It's right here in my office, my cool little exercise toy in my office. So you get $250 off your Carol Bike. You don't have to wait any longer. You can join over 25,000 riders and visit carolbike.com today. carolbike.com.
Health. Performance.
nutrition, longevity, ancestral living, biohacking, and much more. My name is Ben Greenfield. Welcome to the show.
I'm assuming if people sign their names, I could throw them under the bus, but we have a question from Dr. Drew. So what are the two or three things that you think most improved your health? Dr. Drew, are you saying I was sick? The two or three things that most improved my health. It's tough to choose just two or three, obviously. But I would say three things that I do on a very regular basis that for me are non-negotiables to care for my mitochondria and to care for my health are as follows. Number one, light. I'm reading a book right now called The Human Photosynthesis. It's a very interesting book, kind of a rough translation. I believe it's out of Russia. But this book is about the pigment melanin and how it kind of simulates chlorophyll. And it highlights how the human body is actually capable of producing electrical energy in response to biophotons of light using this melanin molecule that, of course, we find in our skin and elsewhere, our retina, for example. Even blood vessels have different photoreceptors that respond to light. This is why one study showed that light shown even on the back of the knee during sleep may actually disrupt circadian rhythm. It kind of highlights the importance of making sure your room is very dark when you go to bed at night. So when you walk into a hotel room that's lit up like a Christmas tree, you want to kind of unplug as much as you can. But this idea of light is, of course, a blessing as well, because we know that exposure to photons of light can amplify our mitochondria's production of ATP. That appears to be something that is even more favorable when we have things like these green and blue pigments circulating in our system, things like chlorophyll, things like this blue spirulina that we've just been seeing, even to a certain extent blueberries and anthocyanins and dark leafy greens and things like that. The combination of colorful foods and sunlight is actually a very, very cool strategy for giving you ATP without eating an appreciable amount of calories. And I'm not a breatharian, I don't think we can survive on air, but we can actually produce electrons in response to light, which is very interesting. So number one for me would be light. And that would include both sunlight and exposure to as much sunlight as possible during the day. But it would also include even, you know, because I like to kind of live with one foot in the realm of ancestral living and the other foot in the realm of modern science. And I'm not opposed to the use of a lot of these so-called photobiomodulation therapies that you can now find with increasing frequency. Things like light panels, light treatments for the head, intranasal light devices, especially for people. And I know you guys experience this in New York City quite a bit, because I was walking around today. You don't necessarily have days that are full of sunlight. None in Spokane, Washington, same thing. But I can simulate some of those more beneficial wavelengths of light in my office using these red light panels or the infrared light therapy for your head, using infrared light saunas, things like this. So the idea of light and using biophotonic energy to amplify health, I think, is pretty underemphasized, especially when you pair that with this concept of kind of eating the rainbow and getting some of these molecules in your bloodstream that respond very well to those photons of light, some of these greens and blues particularly. Number two, in addition to lights, another non-negotiable for me that I do on a daily basis, every day, did it this morning. I'm actually staying over at David's place in Tribeca, and the shower gets nice and cold there. And I do hot-cold contrast every day. When I'm at home, I'm in a sauna every day, always followed up by about 2 to 5 minutes of something cold. When I'm traveling, I'm often too busy to drop into one of these wellness spas with the saunas or go to the cryotherapy chamber, but I have a very simple practice when I'm on the road. It's It's a 5-minute shower, and I realize there's a little bit of water waste going on there. It's not too much. I make up for that by brushing my teeth with a nearly dry toothbrush a couple times a day. The hot cold contrast shower is very simple. 20 seconds of cold, 10 seconds of hot, 10 times through. So it's a 5-minute shower. And when you're alternating heat and cold like this, I mean, this is a trick from athletes. It was, I think LeBron James recently said that was one of his non-negotiables for recovery, is this hot-cold contrast because of the nitric oxide that's produced, because of the blood flow, because of the decrease in inflammatory products, the wakefulness, the cognition. It stimulates the vagus nerve. But you alternate from hot to cold, or you do a long hot session followed by a cold session. That's also something in addition to light that I play around with every single day. And then the third would be our Mother Earth. I try to get in touch with the planet every single day, whether it's my hands on the surface of the earth, my body laying on my back on a nice day in the park, wearing these newer grounding or earthing shoes that allow you to walk and still maintain connection to a conductive surface. They often have things like copper plates or copper plugs built into the bottom of the shoes. On Amazon, you can actually buy straps that wrap around any shoes, not just a pair of grounding shoes or earthing shoes. And while you're walking around the city in your loafers or your tennis shoes, you can actually still be grounded. And I make it a point to get in touch with the planet every single day because the earth is chock full of negative ions. It collects them whenever lightning strikes the surface of the planet. And so when you do that, what you're doing is you're treating your body like a battery. Because the entire human body, every cell, it operates on electrochemical gradient, meaning that there's typically a slightly negative charge inside a cell, positive charge outside a cell. And that's crucial for the proper activity of the electron transport chain. That's how your mitochondria are going to be able to make ATP. Now, when you are in a state of exposure to a lot of these positive ions, appliances, non-native EMF like Wi-Fi, computers, Bluetooth, and a constant state of exposure to those things, you're actually shifting yourself towards a more positive gradient. And one of the best ways to fix that is to get exposed to negative ions. And the way that you do that is by grounding or earthing. There are many companies that sell technologies like grounding or earthing mats, shoes that I've mentioned, pads that you can place on your desk. The research goes back and forth and is kind of controversial about whether or not those type of technologies, if you're in an area that has a lot of power traveling through the ground from substations, for example, such as you would find in a very metropolitan area like this, whether or not those are actually healthy. But there's no denying that at least getting out into a park or a beach or a salty ocean or anything like that where you're getting more of these negative ions is beneficial for the body. There's an entire very good book about this called Earthing. I interviewed the guy who wrote that book on my podcast. You can go listen to it. And it's profound, the effect on wellness and overall energy and health that just simply being outside, specifically in touch with the planet, can have in your body. So those would be the top three, really, would be light, the use of heat and cold, and then also grounding and earthing. Those are non-negotiables that I do just about every day. There are plenty of other things, you know, such as eating and movement and, you know, quality relationships, time with family, all of these other variables, but those are three that come to mind for me right off the bat. So great question, Dr. Drew. If you had to recommend one biohacking device to help with calm and sleep, what would it be? I would definitely say anything that stimulates the vagus nerve. So, you know, the vagus nerve snakes throughout your entire body. It innervates most of your organs, and it actually, in a state of fight and flight, in a state of constant sympathetic nervous system activation, the vagal nerve tone can decrease. You can shift towards a state of being constantly sympathetically aroused, like that blessing that we did before dinner. That was to shift you into a parasympathetic state, so that you would do things that you normally would not do if you were in fight and flight mode. Your body doesn't want to digest food if you're running from a lion or if you're in battle. And so when you take a pause to breathe like that, and when you take a pause to be grateful, and when you take a pause to meditate during the day, you actually shift yourself into parasympathetic. And there are other ways that you can tone your vagus nerve: singing, chanting, humming, breath work, gargling, that hot-cold contrast that I talked about. There's many ways to tone that vagus nerve so it's better able to shift between sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system activation. But this question is specifically asking about a biohacking device, like a tool, like a technology. I would consider biohacking to be any element where we use science to somehow change human biology in some way or another. You can actually use what are called vagal nerve stimulators. There are companies that sell electrodes that are typically applied to the temporal lobe, sometimes right underneath the ear, and they actually stimulate the vagus nerve with a signal that shifts it towards parasympathetic. A couple such devices that I own and I've used, and I can vouch for because I've used both of them. One is a device called the Circadia, which was designed for sleep by a company called Fisher Wallace, but it works so well for sleep. If you're busy at the end of the day and your thoughts are racing, or you want to settle down for a nap midday and check out from all the hubbub at the office, you apply this Fisher Wallace device. It runs about 25 minutes and it shifts you towards parasympathetic mode. The other one that I use, and this one I use more now, it's called a New Calm, N-U-Calm. And this is also a vagal nerve stimulator-like device, but it also is paired with an app that creates special beats that kind of lull you into a very relaxed state. And man, on an airplane or any place where I need to get a good 20 to 40 minute power nap, it's got the only side, I'm kind of an 80-20 guy, I will just use the 20% of any device or technology or strategy that gives me 80% of the results. It's got like 10 different tracks on it, but all I use is the power nap setting. And I'll play the power nap setting once if I have 20 minutes, twice if I have 40 minutes, and it works like gangbusters to relax you and to, as this question says, help with calm and help with sleep. And there are, again, plenty of other things you can do for sleep, but when it comes specifically to a biohacking device, that's the first thing that comes to mind, would be something like the Fisher Wallace Circadia or the New Calm device. All right, J-O-O-V-V. If you're regularly using the Juve, that's a photo, that's one of those photo light devices, and had a tumor that you weren't aware of, what do you think would be the effect of the light on the tumor? I have no freaking clue. I don't know. I mean, I should say this. I'm not a doctor. Please don't misconstrue this as medical advice, but some of the things that I would do if I had cancer are a lot different than what I would do if I did not have a pre-existing tumor or cancer. For example, protein intake, right? Protein intake is wonderful for activating mTOR and shifting you into an anabolic state and saving off sarcopenia and loss of bone density and maintaining strength as you age. But if you're eating a lot of protein and you already have a tumor, and this was demonstrated in that book, The China Study, which is full of flaws, but it is true that in that study, they gave rats in which they had induced a tumor high amounts of casein protein and it caused the tumor to grow, right? So I'm a fan of a moderate to slightly high protein diet, but if I had cancer, all that would go out the window. I'd be on a low protein, low carbohydrate, high fat, high plant diet to shift myself into a state of ketosis, to give my body all the nutrients that it needs for fighting off cancer, for alkalizing the body, to keep cancer from having a lot of glucose substrate to be able to burn. But that is a diet I would use for cancer, not a diet that I would use for my normal day-to-day energy sustenance. There are other examples such as, amino acid supplementation that I would avoid if I had cancer again because it would shift you towards a more pro-growth state. And as far as light goes, technically it is going to induce a little bit of what would be called angiogenesis, which is going to increase the growth of capillaries and could technically feed more blood vessels to a tumor. So there's a wonderful book written by a guy who runs the Anti-Angiogenesis Foundation, Dr. William Lee. He's a very good book called Eat to Beat Disease. If you're into food, you're into health, it would be a wonderful book to add to your library. And in that book, he gets into a lot of foods that are actually anti-angiogenic, that would keep some of that pro-cancer blood vessel growth from occurring. So it'd be a good book to check out to get more into that. So good question. You'll notice how I'll just steer these questions away from the actual question and shift towards something that's a little less iffy. All right, so this question says, when you refeed at night with carbohydrates, what and how much do you eat? Well, that's a great question. I personally don't eat. How many of you in here listen to my podcast, by the way? Okay, so a lot of you might know this. I don't eat any carbohydrates until the nighttime. I save all my carbohydrates for the evening. And the reason for that is multifold. First of all, a little bit of carbohydrate at night can help with your serotonin production, so you sleep a little bit better. And assuming that you've restricted carbohydrates the rest of the day, it's not going to have a huge impact on your triglycerides or on things like, you know, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease or something like this, because if you've not been eating carbohydrates all day, your liver glycogen stores are a little empty, your muscle glycogen stores are a little empty, and your body just sops up those carbohydrates to be used for the next day's activity, and it's burning fatty acids and producing a lot of ketones the rest of the day. So it's almost like a cyclic low carb or a cyclic ketosis-based diet. So it's a very good way to increase your metabolic efficiency, to kind of turn yourself into a fat-burning machine by not eating a lot of carbohydrates, then eating all your carbs in the evening. Helps with sleep. The other thing is, of course, as you guys know, you're sitting around right now, dinner a lot of times is the most social meal of the day. And I think the people who follow the rules of dinner like a pauper, or not eating any carbohydrates at night, the problem is it really flies in the face of social enjoyment. Right? So if you're good all day long, a lot of times you can kind of let yourself go a little bit more in the evening because, again, you have empty muscle glycogen, relatively empty muscle glycogen, and pretty empty liver glycogen stores. So your body's going to use that glucose rather than converting it into triglycerides and storing it as fat and adipose tissue. It's going to actually restore your liver and your muscle glycogen levels. Now, it is true that you are more insulin sensitive in the morning. From an endocrine standpoint, your body is better equipped to be able to handle carbohydrates in the morning without a steep blood glucose response or without a long time of that glucose remaining in the bloodstream. But you can induce a state that's very much like that in the evening. You guys know how you would do that? Exercise, right? So for example, I walked over here from Tribeca, right? So I got a good brisk 40-minute walk in before dinner. Timing a strength training session or a high-intensity interval training session or even a brisk walk like that, right, at 5 or 6 or 6:30 before dinner pushes you into a state of insulin sensitivity very similar to what you would be at in the morning. And so, again, if you save all your carbohydrates for evening, it kind of behooves you to do some type of exercise later on in the day, especially timing it before you have dinner. So there's a variety of reasons that I do the carbohydrates in the morning. Now, how much and how many? The quality of the carbohydrates is always very good. So I'm not talking about the Twinkies, donuts, pizza diet in the evening. Right? For me, it's always like butternut squash or roast pumpkin with a little raw honey or, you know, some of my wife's lovely fermented sourdough bread with some grass-fed butter on it. Some of the wonderful clean type of crackers and breads that we had tonight. Usually with dinner or after dinner, a little bit of dark chocolate. Sometimes with dinner or before dinner, a little bit of red wine. Right? So all recognizable carbohydrates, carbohydrates that are typically cellular. You guys ever heard of cellular versus acellular carbohydrates? Acellular carbohydrates are carbohydrates that have been heavily processed, right? Like Wonder Bread, white rice would be another example. A lot of the sugars that you find isolated from the actual cells in which they're supposed to be accompanied. Quinoa, amaranth, millet, good fermented bread, squashes, underground storage organs like tubers, purple potatoes, yams. All of these are cellular carbohydrates. They're more nutrient dense and they're processed by the body in a way that does not as significantly rise blood glucose. So if you get a chance at some point, you should look up acellular versus cellular carbohydrates and consume cellular carbohydrates as a lion's share of the carbs that you take in. And certainly there's some situations, like I talked about chocolate, right? Like all chocolate has a little bit of coconut sugar or sugar in it or some acellular carbohydrate, right? But it's trace amounts of that, and the large portion of carbohydrates with dinner is typically a cellular carbohydrate. As far as how many, here's the deal. We know that the liver can store about 400 calories of carbs, right? So if you've been eating a low-carb diet all day long and you've been relatively active, your liver glycogen stores are going to be pretty empty. So most people, men or women, can handle about 100 grams of carbohydrates with dinner in this scenario. And an active person who also has some kind of empty muscle glycogen levels going in, I mean, I have some athletes who I work with who will have 250, 300 grams of carbohydrates with dinner and be just fine as far as their blood glucose levels, their hemoglobin A1C levels, the amount of ketones that they produce. So it's kind of dependent on activity levels. But typically, if you want all the glucose that you need for your joints, for your hormones, for a workout the next day, et cetera, usually starting with somewhere around 100 grams is a pretty good goal to shoot for, assuming you're active and you've been restricting carbohydrates the rest of the day. So it's a great question. A lot of places we could rabbit hole on, but that's a good question. All right. What can be done to rid the body of glyphosate or to mitigate exposure? Gosh, that's such a good question because how many of you heard that story of your friend or maybe you who travels to Europe or to say Italy and has pasta and has bread and comes back and you're like, I feel great. I didn't gain weight, my stomach didn't hurt. I had all these glutinous products, but I felt fine. Well, sometimes a big reason for that can be because, especially in the U.S., the gluten that we're consuming is accompanied by glyphosate because many of the crops that contain gluten are sprayed with herbicides and pesticides in the U.S. And glyphosate is capable of rendering your gut walls slightly permeable. So these gluten proteins, these large gluten proteins, don't stay in the gut. They can pass into the bloodstream and cause some immune reactions, some inflammatory reactions. And so that's why if you are going to consume gluten, rule number one is don't consume gluten from a crop that's been sprayed with glyphosate. So if you don't know that it's organic or non-GMO, I really wouldn't be going near wheat or any gluten-containing product. And, just about most grains have trace amounts of gluten in them, except milk is one of the safer ones if you want to play it totally safe. The other thing is that there are certain compounds that can help to render the gut less permeable. They can be used to heal the gut. One is colostrum. It's the first part of a mammal mother's milk. And some supplement companies will harvest colostrum from goats or from cows. And upon consumption, they've got some really interesting studies. Even athletes who are exercising in hot weather, that's one of the worst cases of glyphosate to render the gut wall permeable. They'll feed them colostrum before this exercise in hot weather, and the gut permeability significantly decreases. So colostrum is fantastic for the gut. Another one is called lignite. Lignite is a soil-based probiotic extract, and there's a company called Ion Biome that makes lignite. And my kids use that because we are exposed to glyphosate no matter what, if we're having produce or grains or anything like that. And even though we're very careful, there's trace amounts. So my kids have a shot of lignite every day. They also, if we are going to go to one of the restaurants we like, there's one in Spokane that has these wonderful popovers, these bread popovers with this lavender butter that's amazing. Nothing like the grass-fed butter here, David, but they're pretty damn good, these popovers. We always travel to restaurants with this stuff called Gluten Guardian. It's basically an enzyme called dipeptidylpeptidase, and it pre-digests any gluten that you eat and just turns it into soup. So even though you're still getting exposure to the glyphosate, if you take this Gluten Guardian before you have a bunch of gluten-containing food, even if it's a non-glyphosate gluten-containing food, you usually digest it far easier. And also, by the way, speaking of blood glucose and the carbohydrate thing, I almost forgot to tell you guys this. The two best ways to plummet your blood glucose after a long meal like this, postprandial stroll, like going for a walk, and it can be as little as 10 minutes, right? So, for example, if I take the subway home tonight, I'll just skip two subway stations and take one that's 10 minutes away instead of one that's around the corner. The other one is cold, okay? It doesn't have to be a cold shower. It can literally be a brisk walk in cold weather. So you guys are in a perfect scenario right here when you leave to, maybe walk out 10 minutes before you call the Uber or walk around the block once before you go to your car. It's actually a very good way to drop your postprandial glucose. I do that a lot when I'm traveling, big dinners. So I always take a quick walk after a meal. If I'm having a car with a bunch of people right at the front of the restaurant, I will sometimes bite the bullet and take a cold shower before I get home and go to bed. And the nice part about that is the cold actually really enhances your deep sleep levels too. Sleeping in the cold room or sleeping cold is one of the best ways to sleep solid. My rule for sleep is if there's slight resistance for me mentally to removing my clothing before I get into bed, this sleep temperature is perfect. Take off these clothes and do it. That's a good sleep temperature.
Hey, you want to spice things up in the bedroom and boost your sexual performance and do it naturally without nasty prescription drugs? You got to check out this stuff, Joy Mode. It's a powder. You put it in water, or if you're like me and you're a savage, you can dry powder into your mouth. Contains clinically supported doses of L-citrulline, arginine, yohimbine, and vitamin C. So after taking this stuff called their Sexual Performance Booster, again by Joy Mode, your blood levels of arginine and yohimbine increase, and that directly promotes nitric oxide production, penile tissue relaxation, and increased drive. Well, the antioxidant action of vitamin C protects the nitric oxide from oxidative degradation, which then enhances the blood flow promoting activity of the nitric oxide. They thought of everything. They're super smart over at Joy Mode, and collectively these effects enhance sex drive and blood flow naturally to the penis or to the clitoris, My wife takes it too. It's amazing. You get better orgasms, better blood flow. You can kiss nasty prescription medications goodbye and have natural guilt-free energy for boosting your sexual performance. You can get 20% off your first order from Joy Mode. How? Go to usejoymode.com/greenfield. That's usejoymode.com/greenfield. J-O-Y. usejoymode.com/greenfield. They'll give you 20% off your first order. Last night, I got my shipment in. That's right. Paleo Valley sent me their fermented meat sticks, which are amazing. They're these beef sticks. I gave a few to some of my friends already, which they love. I actually interviewed Stephen Gundry on my podcast, and he talked about how when you look at a lot of these blue zones, the ones that are the highest ranking in terms of longevity eat meat, but the meat that they eat is actually fermented. And that's exactly what they've done with Paleo Valley. They've actually taken really good grass-fed, grass-finished beef. They've fermented, which naturally introduces gut-friendly probiotics, but more importantly, breaks down a lot of the sugars that would normally cause meat to be harmful, concentrates the vitamins, makes it more digestible, and they have fantastic flavors. They got the original. They've got one that's like a summer sausage. They have a garlic sausage. They have a teriyaki. It's probably my favorite. And you can now get your hands on fermented beef sticks that basically blow that Slim Jim beef jerky out of the water. So check out paleovalley.com/Ben. That's paleovalley.com/Ben to try out these beef sticks and get 15% off your order. Not just beef sticks, fermented beef sticks.
All right. How important do you think it is to eat seasonal local food? Pretty important. But like, you have to live a little too. We do live in a magical age where there are giant jet planes that fly across the sky, and we've got the ability to be able to import wonderful foods from South America and get coffee from Costa Rica. So yeah, I've got avocados at my house. I got some coconut milk. I got coffee. But you know, 90% of what we eat, we go to local farmers market, grow in garden beds. I hunt a lot of our meat. We get as much as we can locally. We'll look up local CSA. So it's just better for the body. The cool thing is all that food contains bacteria that's good for your biome, and specifically foods that are full of the bacteria that supports your biome based on your local environment. It's actually good for your immune system where you live. And if you're raising children in that environment, their immune system becomes very capable of handling any type of viruses or immune system assailants in the environment they're growing up in. If they're eating a lot of that local seasonal food that has that local bacteria. All right. What is your take on psychedelics? Woo-hoo. Bring them on. I think that psychedelics, honestly, are used very irresponsibly these days because people are doing psilocybin and MDMA and LSD and ketamine, and Burning Man is becoming so popular, and books like Michael Pollan's Change of Mind and Stephen Kotler's Stealing Fire has everybody, you know, off doing their 38th ayahuasca session and, you know, sitting with you know, some shaman in their apartment doing MDMA. And the problem is that, like, plant medicine takes hard work. There's a lot of integration. There's a lot of journaling. There's a lot of preparation going into properly structured plant medicine or psychedelic ceremony, and a lot of preparation going out. And I will do plant medicine, I'm not talking about like microdosing with a little psilocybin and lion's mane or something like that, which is actually great for cognition. Microdosing with a very small, like 1/10 of a trip dose of LSD, very good for merging the left and right hemispheres of the brain, and allowing for creative and analytical thinking. But when we're talking about getting yourself into an actual psychedelic state, in which technically you've lost control, you're journeying, your ego has dissolved, you're incapable of being fully present and lucid, that's something that you need to approach very seriously. I will do something like that about once a quarter. And typically I'm journaling and listening to a digital recorder that recorded what I said during that session, if I said anything, and then transcribing, writing that down, and sitting with that, and analyzing that. And there's a dieta going in, fasting from many different compounds, like alcohol or certain forms of meat. I mean, you approach this stuff religiously. This is not about going with your buddies to Costa Rica and doing ayahuasca, right? And then, you know, laughing about on the plane ride home about the cool visions that you saw, right? This stuff takes integration, it takes journaling, it takes preparation. But in a proper set and setting, I'm not opposed to the use of psychedelics if there's a specific intention. Otherwise, I think that it just becomes a party drug that exhausts your serotonin levels and can mess up your receptors and your sensitivity to neurotransmitters. So it's something you need to play very carefully with, but I'm not against it. I'm certainly not against like small, responsible microdosing. So, all right, when you are trying a new diet product or workout method, how long do you try it for before you feel you can give an accurate assessment? It totally depends. I quantify a lot. And I'll tell you what I do to quantify and keep my finger on the pulse of all these new things that I'm trying. You guys saw the book back there. It's hundreds of pages, you know, biohacks and supplements and tools and toys. And what I use to gauge my own body is I track my what's called my heart rate variability every day. Heart rate variability is a measurement of that sympathetic and parasympathetic tone I was talking about, your vagal nerve tone. I use this ring, it's called the Oura Ring for that. There's a wristband called a Whoop that can work well for that. There's also a real-time measurement that you can use using something like an Elite HRV or a NatureBeat. But tracking HRV is trickled down from like professional European sports, right, where they're always on the cutting edge, especially European football. And they've been tracking HRV to predict illness and injury and performance metrics for a very long time. But now it's something that via wearable devices that are relatively affordable, most people in the general population can track things like HRV. And it can predict illness, it can predict injury, it can predict whether or not a supplement was good for you, bad for you. It can give you clues about what kind of diets and foods agree with you. And you're simply tracking that value and seeing it's going up, which is good, or down, which is less favorable each day. So I track HRV on a continual basis. I also track sleep. I use the same type of devices to track my sleep, my deep sleep cycles, how long it takes me to fall asleep, how restful I am, you know, whether it's three or five glasses of wine that throws me out of deep sleep cycles. And you can track just about anything. We have a big tracker in the audience right here, Quantified Bob, right? Local guy. He quantifies everything. What's your website, Quantified Bob? Just quantifiedbob.com. Yeah, he tracks a hell of a lot more than I do. So we've got sleep, we've got HRV. And then as far as like blood measurements, things like that, it's very simple. I do a quarterly blood panel. There are companies like Wellness FX or Inside Tracker that will allow you to get that blood panel, access to a nice slick PDF or dashboard that shows you all that data. And it's pretty easy. You go down to a lab that's somewhere near your home and you get a blood draw and you have the results within a week or so. There are other companies like Thorne that are now allowing you to do that in the comfort of your own home via tests that they send you using much, much smaller amounts of blood. So a blood test on about a quarterly basis. I do a stool test about once a year, looking for yeast, parasites, fungus, gut inflammation, anything that would affect the gut. For that, I use a company called Genova Diagnostics, and it's a three-day stool panel because you want to look at how the stool is changing from day to day. It's nasty to think about, but since you guys are done with dinner, most of you, especially the chocolate souffles, if you have a parasite or something, it'll hatch and it'll release eggs, but not every day, right? So you want to test for 3 days in a row if you're going to do a stool panel, and you want to look for everything that could be going on in your gut. So I do a stool panel. DNA test. That's something that technically, unless you're messing around with CRISPR technology and changing your genes, you only need to do once in a lifetime. But I think it's very good data, and typically I'll take my DNA data, and 23andMe will only give you access to a certain amount of health metrics. So I'll export that data to a company or a website like one that I like is called Stratagene, S-T-R-A-T-A gene. And if you guys don't have something to write things down with, we're recording all of this, you'll get access to the recording later. But Stratagene will identify all the different dirty genes. It'll say, like, okay, you don't produce enough glutathione, so you can use glutathione supplementation. Or you have poor conversion of sunlight to vitamin D, so you might be a candidate for vitamin D supplementation. So it gives you a lot of really good actionable data. And then finally, in addition to blood, gut, and DNA, a couple of other tests that I really like is a urinary test for hormones. There's one called a Dutch panel that will test your hormones and your neurotransmitters. You can pee on a stick for 5 times during the day. It tells you a ton about your body. And then the last one is a really good food allergy panel. It's not going to give you this big laundry list of false positives that you need to avoid that you hang in your refrigerator, but instead identifies with pretty laser-like precision which foods you should not be eating based on a true allergenic response or food intolerance. That one's called a Cyrex panel, C-Y-R-E-X. So that's an example of the type of panels that I'll kind of keep my eye on. Some need to be done very infrequently, like a genetic test or food allergy test. Some I do regularly, like a blood test or a hormone panel, and then some I'm doing every day, like tracking HRV and sleep. And with all these metrics, I'm able to really, truly see the impact that a certain lifestyle change or dietary change or exercise change up is having on my body. So those are a few of the ways that I self-quantify. And kind of as far as how long I try something out before I feel I can give it an accurate assessment, that totally depends. Like if I'm taking a nootropic or something for mental function, I know within a couple of hours. Right? If I'm taking something that kind of builds up within the body, like a new multivitamin or something, it's typically from one blood test and a full quarter before the next blood test before I'm actually looking at that data and seeing how it affected me. All right. What's my favorite health-related gadget? All right. It varies, but right now I'm wearing a gadget that I'm really liking. It's called an Apollo. It's on my ankle right now. And Apollo was developed by a guy who works with a bunch of different neuroscientists and also does research with the MAPS Foundation on psychedelics. He's done a lot of research on trauma. And he has developed a device that emits a non-audible sound signal that travels up the long bone of whichever limb that you happen to have placed it on to induce a specific function. So using a phone app, you can set it to sleep, or you can set it to relaxation, or you can set it to meditation, or you can set it to social and open, or you can set it to wake up. And it's called Apollo. I think it launches like next week, actually. I'm actually trying out the beta phase over right now, and I have an interview with the guy coming out next week, David Rabin. You guys should listen to that interview because it's actually a fascinating device. This is important to me. The Bluetooth and any Wi-Fi signals or anything like that can be disabled on it. So once you activate it from your phone, you can set it into kind of dead mode or airplane mode and it just runs on its own. So that's something I really like right now. It's called Apollo, and it uses sound waves to induce a specific emotional reaction. So it's kind of slick. So that's the first one that comes to mind. P.S. told me to avoid coffee. Can't. Issues with cortisol, inflammation, or adrenal glands. I don't quite understand the question, but I can tell you that my approach to coffee is that it's tasty, effective stuff, but it is not without its vices, meaning that because it can really activate or bind to these adenosine receptors in tissue. Adenosine is the molecule that makes you sleepy. So the more coffee you drink, the more adenosine receptors your body has to make for the coffee to bind to, for the caffeine to bind to. And so what happens is it gets harder and harder and harder to fall asleep the more and more coffee you use over time, or the more regularly you use coffee over time. And this is even if you're using coffee in the morning, right? A lot of people will say, I'm just not gonna drink coffee afternoon and I'll be fine. But if you struggle with your sleep, a lot of times it's because you've oversaturated your receptors. You don't have enough adenosine to bind to those receptors and make you sleepy. So the fix for that is you just switch to decaf about once a month or so, or once every couple of months. It takes about 7 to 10 days of avoiding caffeine or just drinking much smaller amounts of it, like decaf coffee, to reset the adenosine receptors. So that's my strategy, is I just have certain times of the year where I'll switch to decaf. Usually I'll just wait until I'm about out of the coffee, the wonderful, tasty, antioxidant-rich Keurig coffee in my pantry. And then my mom owns a coffee shop, and I just have her send me up some of her wonderful decaf coffee, and I just drink that for 7 to 10 days and reset the receptors and switch back to regular. So that's the way that I do it, is just not have any of the caffeinated stuff around the house every once in a while, and switch to decaf or switch to a non-caffeinated beverage or a beverage that's lower in caffeine. Another one that I like for that is drinking chocolate. I use this stuff made by a company called My Cacao. They do this really good cacao tea. It's not got any calories in it. It's just these organic cacao shells soaked in water. And the end result is you get this stuff that tastes amazingly like chocolate. I put a little bit of stevia and cinnamon in that. It's an amazing caffeine substitute. It has this really feel-good effect from the theobromine and the chocolate. It kind of this dopamine release. So that's that's also a good toffee alternative. Here's a good one. Thoughts on the assertions or claims made in the Game Changers documentary? Who saw the Game Changers documentary? I can't tell if that was the majority of you, but it's a very, very popular movie. But, you know, basically outlined the fact that athletes can thrive on a plant-based diet, and it didn't say outright, but hinted at the fact that that meat might actually be bad for you. And you know, my take on that is that you can certainly build muscle and be athletic and have high performance on a plant-based diet, but the risk that you take are the number of anti-nutrients that come in those plants, meaning that quinoa has a soap-like irritant that is covered in called saponins that require the quinoa to be rinsed and soaked repeatedly. And when they do this in South America, they'll even use the water that they rinse the quinoa in to wash their clothing because it's so high in these soap-like irritants. We already discussed gluten, right? How you have to ferment gluten in order to deactivate a lot of the gluten, pre-digest a lot of the gluten, and to deactivate a lot of the phytic acids that are in that gluten that can also do a number on your gut. Legumes, same thing. A lot of legumes need to be soaked. They need to be treated properly. There are some grains that need to be sprouted. There are many plants that have a host of anti-nutrients in them that can affect thyroid function, like large amounts of kale or spinach or broccoli or cauliflower. And smaller amounts of them aren't too bad. But when you get to the point where you're relying upon plants as your primary source of protein, you risk having to eat enough plants to where either A, you're getting gas and bloating from the mass amounts of fiber that you're having to digest and consume, or B, you create gut damage and you don't feel well because of all the plant anti-nutrients that you're consuming. The exception to that would be if you're using a lot of old world methods like fermentation and soaking and sprouting. It's a huge chore and takes a ton of time versus just having a freaking piece of salmon or a couple of eggs or a little bit of grass-fed steak, for example. So it's much easier to get the proteins that you need from meat. Technically, with the right mix of plants, grains, legumes, etc., you can match the amino acid profile of what you'd be getting if you're eating meat. It's just far more work, and there's a bigger risk of damage to your gut from the anti-nutrients. In addition to that, it can be difficult on the environment to grow that many plants, especially in an era where we're largely monocropping. We don't have proper soil treatment practices. If you're in it for the ethical game to save the animals, so many small animals die from all the monocropping. So that can be an issue. And you know, the same issue could be said for CAFO food, for animals that are raised inhumanely or unethically. But if you can hunt your meat, or if you can get your meat from a good regenerative farm that's using proper ethical practices to raise its livestock and raise its animals, you know, pasture-raised chickens, grass-fed, grass-finished beef, etc., then I think that you can make an ethical argument for eating meat being okay, and you can certainly make a nutrient density argument for eating meat being okay. And when you look at a lot of the athletes in that movie, the bodybuilders, the big muscular guys, what they leave out is how much powder and processed plant protein they're having to eat to sustain the amount of amino acids that they need. So again, you can do it, but even that comes with a host of, you know, if you ever stepped on an elevator with one of those dudes and they fart, you're gonna pass out. It's a pretty bad scenario. I've been to a lot of bodybuilding shows. I know what it's like, not just with the whey protein, with the plant protein powders too. So I just can't really endorse for athletes who are not willing to do all the work necessary to make plants digestible a purely plant-based diet. And even in that scenario, they're getting to supplement with creatine, carnosine, L-carnosine, taurine, vitamin B12, DHA, a host of nutrients that shove the supplement budget through the roof if you don't want to build up nutrient deficits over time. So I'm an omnivore. I eat good, healthy plants, usually local, that are grown organically, that are sustainably harvested, and that don't rely upon monocropping like lots of grains and corns do. And then I hunt my meat, or any meat that I eat that I haven't hunted, I make sure that I know the source of that meat. So I think that's a much, much better way to treat food versus myopically eating, say, just a carnivore diet or just a vegan diet or a plant-based diet. So yeah, I had some issues with that documentary, and I think some issues were not raised in that documentary that should have been. So here we go. Any tips for improving posture? And I love this question. The entire chapter 18 of the book is all about posture and symmetry, and I spent so much time on that chapter because it is such an under emphasized component of beauty and health and aesthetics. So a few very simple tips. I'm going to give you just a few. Read that chapter on beauty and symmetry, though, because it delves into all the rest. Number one, breathe through your mouth as little as possible. When you breathe through your nose, not only do you fully oxygenate the air, you filter the air much better. You also don't activate the baroreceptors in your chest that are responsible for triggering the release of cortisol. So you're in a more parasympathetically driven state. And your actual facial structure changes in terms of your jaw formation and the position of your tongue when you train yourself to breathe through your nose. This includes, there's a wonderful book about this called The Oxygen Advantage by Patrick McCown. This includes during exercise. You need to train yourself to the point where you can get through a tough gym workout, and only when you're digging to the deepest of wells would you breathe through your mouth. The rest of the time, you breathe through your nose. It's actually a wonderful way to train. They usually take the little Spartan kids and send them off on runs where they had to hold gravel or water in their mouth and just breathe through the nose the entire time. And that was a form of mental training, but it's actually breathing through your nose, especially while you sleep. Some people are even mouth taping when they sleep. It's wonderful for posture. Number two would be your shoes, the actual heel rise of your shoes. You can see right now I'm wearing my Vibram monkey shoes. These are Vibram KSO Treks that I'm wearing. I wear these Earth Runner sandals. Those are like earthing or grounding sandals. My kids right now wear Nike Frees, right? So any minimalist low drop shoe, girls, I know that you like the way that you look in heels. Guys like the way that you look in heels. Guys, you own cowboy boots. The ladies like how you look in cowboy boots and tight jeans. But if you want to F yourself biomechanically, that is one of the fastest ways to do it, because you completely turn off your glutes and activate your hip flexors, and you create a lot of postural issues that result in low back pain that can stick with you for a really long time. So pay attention to the shoes. Pay attention to nasal breathing. And then there's a lot of different forms of structural therapy that can really help to realign your body that you can use for movement snaps throughout the day. Two of those that I've taken courses in that I think are good tools to have in your back pocket if you have a chance to take a movement or a symmetry course. One is called ELDOA, E-L-D-O-A. I have a podcast about it on my website, but it's a form of self-myofascial stretching. I'm a fan of any type of stretching or body work that you can do yourself, so you don't have to rely upon a practitioner to go and see you. You don't have to get a massage, you know, twice a week to put your body back into place. But ELDOA works very well, and then the other one is called foundation training. Those two forms of training, ELDOA is self-myofascial training, and foundation training is a form of training that teaches you how to kind of reactivate your glutes, turn on your butt, decompress your spine, get rid of back pain, alleviate some of the pain related to things like herniated discs. It's a very, very good way to train. It's foundation training. It's just a series of 8 to 10 different moves that you can do in the morning when you wake up, or maybe if you're in a sauna, or sometime when you have a quick break during work, cut your lunchtime short, leave 20 minutes early, go to your foundation training. But that's a very, very good way for symmetry as well. There's a whole bunch more stuff in the book, but those are three things I pay attention to. Nasal breathing, your shoes, either ELDOA or foundation training. What's one thing you have changed your mind on over the past year or two, which you previously felt strongly about? I would say something even more important that I've changed my mind on in the past year or two is just in riding Boundless, and getting to the anti-aging longevity chapter of that, and going through what all the Blue Zones are doing, there are freaking 110, 112-year-old cigarette-smoking, gin-chugging great-grandmothers who are living these long, wonderful, relatively healthy, happy lives. There are dudes in Sardinia and Nicoya and Okinawa who would not know a biohack if it slapped them in the face, who have never been on a Vasper or an ARX machine or used a photo biomodulation panel or taken metformin or rapamycin. And in many cases, that's not even because they're doing the equivalent of that. Yeah, they're getting some sunlight maybe and controlling glycemic variability, but also, you know, some of these guys are eating potato chips, right? And driving Datsuns around a polluted city. But one element that you see over and over and over again in the lives of these people and in the habits of these people is that they have a good circle of friends. They have healthy, thriving, relationships. They're the people whose homes you go to for lunch, and there's like three uncles and two cousins arguing at the kitchen table at some TV sitcom, and we're used to hunching over our computer, shoving a salad in our faces all alone in the office, right? People who, at first glance, we would say are defying everything that we've learned in Westernized culture about lifespan and about longevity, and yet they're still living these long, healthy lives. And it's because, in many cases, emotions and relationships, characteristics, all of these can trump biology, right? If you have love in your life, if you have positive relationships, heck, a belief in a higher power, a meditation practice, a prayer practice, low amounts of stress, people in your life who love you and who you love, then in many cases, all this other, pardon the expression, shit that we're doing in our quest to live the longest time or be as healthy as possible or get the best sleep score, it's actually pretty meaningless, because why do it if you're not happy? Why do it if you have a bunch of spats with your brother and your sister and your mom and your dad and your friends and you don't know your neighbor's name and you've lost contact with all your buddies and girlfriends from high school and college? I mean, like, that's the stuff that really counts. That's the stuff that really matters. And I went for a really long time in my life thinking I could be like the lone wolf biohacker who didn't need friends, who didn't prioritize family dinners, who didn't have a deep spiritual relationship with my wife, who wasn't talking to God every day, and I could just push through with all my fancy, you know, biological firepower and know-how. And it's simply not true. And I've vastly changed my mind on that. I would rather be in here till 1 a.m. eating chocolate and getting drunk with you guys and having an amazing time in lab. We're not going to do that. Don't worry. But I would much rather that than go back to my condo and shine laser lights on my balls and fall asleep on my knees. So that's the one thing that I've changed my mind on most dramatically. Thank you guys for coming.
Well, thanks for listening to today's show. You can grab all the show notes, the resources, pretty much everything that I mentioned over at bengreenfieldfitness.com, along with plenty of other goodies from me, including the highly helpful Ben Recommends page, which is a list of pretty much everything that I've ever recommended for hormones, sleep, digestion, fat loss, performance, and plenty more. Please also know that all the links, all the promo codes that I mentioned during this and every episode help to make this podcast happen and to generate income that enables me to keep bringing you this content every single week. So when you listen in, be sure to use the links in the show notes, use the promo codes that I generate, because that helps to float this thing and keep it coming to you each and every week.